Chapter 12. Have an agenda and work it. Ride the chaos inherent in negotiation. My system is designed to help us control the chaos in negotiation, and sometimes chaos is not too strong a word. Things get complicated quickly, and you can find yourself being pushed and pulled by your adversaries in many different directions. How many times have you found yourself wondering, what just happened? What went wrong? What should I have done differently? What should I do now? Who should I be talking to, and what should I say? Bottom line, you're confused. You're flailing around. Your budgets are out of control, and effective decision-making is in jeopardy. Negotiating in this scattered, aimless way is a good way to get your brains kicked in on a daily basis, and that ain't fun. This chapter introduces that part of my system that will tell you what went wrong, what to do next, how to keep your negotiations on track, how to continue making effective decisions, how to keep your brains intact. The subject is agendas. In all fields, the most successful people deal with the most difficult problems directly. Negotiation is no different. Your ability to identify the greatest problems and then to bring them into the negotiation head-on by way of an agenda will exponentially improve your record. Agendas also help us to maintain emotional control. They're our first line of defense in this regard, our surefire means of staying on track. I cannot overemphasize their value. The preparation of the agenda is a terrific exercise in and of itself, as well as a test of your ability to see the negotiation clearly and to assign priorities. In a corporation with negotiating teams, valid agendas are absolutely critical for keeping everyone on the team on the same page and talking with one voice, so to speak, in their various encounters with various adversaries. If 5 team members using the same agenda return with 5 drastically different answers from their counterpoints, they're well advised to stop and take a hard look at the discrepancies. Are the members of the other team not on the same page, or are they playing games? You need to know. For your part, if your team is having trouble crafting explicit agendas, you're also having trouble with mission and purpose, or with goals, or with blank slating, or with painting the pain, or with budgets. Or with all of these. As with mission and purpose and budgets, our camp system agendas are different from those used by most negotiators and business people. The typical business agenda lists topics to be discussed, often in no particular order. Even if there is an order, we know what happens all too often. The anticipated order is more or less discarded, and a free-for-all ensues. Like many other business meetings, this one ends up as a frustrating waste of time and energy. Our agendas must do better. They must provide a clear path through the negotiation thicket. Every negotiating session, even a telephone call or an email, no matter how short, even 1 minute or 1 paragraph, requires an agenda. Maybe this sounds radical at first, but it's really not. Every call and email has some kind of purpose, doesn't it? I hope so. So, what's the purpose? The agenda makes it clear. In fact, what can guide the day-to-day nuts and bolts of the negotiation other than agendas? And you don't have to be a control freak to enjoy the control offered by agendas that really work. Every agenda must be negotiated. Joe, isn't this the greatest thing you've ever seen? Don't you need this right away? This is for you, Joe. Forget it. An adversary can never be asked to do something if a valid agenda was not negotiated. Bill, I said I would look at it, and I have. I never said I would act. In my system, there are no hidden agendas. What would be the point of one? You hope to get a deal that sticks in the end by springing surprises? Hope again. The only agenda that is valid for purposes of negotiation, the only agenda that will produce results, is the one that has been negotiated with an adversary. Take a moment and be certain that you understand the implications of this rule. The only agenda that is valid for purposes of negotiation is one that has been negotiated with the adversary. The more effective you are in negotiating the agenda, the more comfortable the adversary organization will be in allowing you into the inner sanctum. your competence will be appreciated and embraced. Let's try again with Joe. Joe, I'm not sure this information has any value to you, and if it doesn't, just say so and we'll go no further. Fair? Okay. Then that's our agreement. If it doesn't apply, we'll go no further. If it does apply, we'll move forward. Okay? With this agenda in place, Bill isn't going to feel blindsided or pushed to close. You've given him every right to say no. You've reiterated your point 3 times, 3+. Your own emotions are under control. That's some agenda. Before making his opening statement in the conference call in the Network Inc. negotiation we've been following, the president of Network said, "If you have any questions, please direct them to me. I'll be the only one responding to any questions unless I defer them to someone else. Is that okay with everyone?" He was negotiating what I call a mini-agenda. You may have a major agenda and several mini-agendas, some of which you resort to only if a problem comes up outside the scope of the major agenda. A mini-agenda can be almost anything, and it must be everything it needs to be. No detail is too minor. "May I ask you a difficult question without your getting mad at me? You're sure I can ask you a tough question? You won't get mad?" That's another mini-agenda, and another 3+. With that mini-agenda in place, you can ask the question without fear, but asking that question out of the blue might have been enough to send your adversary packing. Agendas and mini-agendas not only make you comfortable, they make your adversary comfortable. By keeping your adversary comfortable, you maintain control and leverage. What the agenda can contain. A valid agenda or mini-agenda has 5 basic categories. 1. Problems. 2. Our baggage. 3. Their baggage. 4. What we want. And 5. What happens next. Any given agenda can include issues in some or all of the categories, but every issue you need to negotiate, every single one, will fit into one of these 5 categories. Let's consider each in detail. Problems. What are problems? We all know the answer in the general sense, and I'm talking in the general sense here. A problem is anything you see as a problem. Anything. They can even be imagined, not real. How can an imagined problem be valid? If it's imagined by either party, it's in the air, and if it's in the air, it has to be dealt with. So if your adversary feels she has a problem, even though you don't think it's a problem, you must see it as one. Can I be specific? Sure. Your company used to have a reputation for poor service. That issue has been solved, as any of your current customers know. But this negotiation is with an adversary who remembers the bad old days, who wrote you off, perhaps justifiably, and has just now been enticed to take another look. That negative memory is definitely a problem. Put it on the agenda, the very first agenda. Or your big company used to have the reputation with suppliers of being such a mean and nasty negotiator that top-flight suppliers were driven away. They'd been burned once too often. Now you've had to change. A fanciful scenario, I admit. But many of these suppliers don't know that. You have to put your reputation on an agenda. Let's say you sell the most expensive automobile in the world. Now, you don't make assumptions. You never make assumptions because you never know. But you do understand that money can be a real problem for many people who would love to own this car, and you do lay this question on the table for upfront consideration. It may be the first item on your agenda for the negotiation. "Bill, I'm in the business of putting people in the finest motor car in the world. Before we go any further, are you able to spend or finance $200,000 to buy a Rolls-Royce? It's a lot of money. We all know that." "Interesting. You could write a check for $200,000 if you choose to do so today. That's great. What bank would you draw the check on?" "Oh, I see. You'd borrow the money from the bank before you write the check." "Oh, you'd borrow the money from any bank that will loan it to you. Interesting." You've nurtured, you've reversed, you've connected, and you've found out where things stand. Good work. Of course, this scenario is extreme, but extremes provide us with clear pictures. Problems can be of a general nature, your company's history of poor service, the question of money, or they can be specific. Recall the negotiation with Craig, the commercial real estate agent who needed the additional $50,000 to close the deal. The minute this became a problem, it went on an agenda. If he'd hidden this problem, he more than likely would have lost the deal. Here's a small sample of problems on agendas I've coached. We don't understand Mr. Smith's vision of his business. A thick glass wall exists between the two companies. We see each other but remain at a distance. This may be preventing us from gaining access to their best technology and preventing them from gaining access to our best technology. Our company doesn't know where the adversary is going with its new program, and therefore our preparation is impaired. Our company doesn't know what Company X truly requires. It would be reckless for our company to respond to their request for proposal at this time. Mr. Jones wouldn't come to the demonstration. Our company is focused on working on real opportunities with customers who see value in our technology. We don't generally put on demonstrations for every customer who requests one. We're getting conflicting directions from different departments of their company. The building we want to buy is improperly zoned. The building we want to sell is improperly zoned. We'll probably need the seller to help with financing, maybe carry a second mortgage. Your product is terrific, but it has always been too expensive for us. We have this negative attitude going in. Your company has the reputation of picking only the low-hanging fruit, and we're a premium service. Obviously, any list of potential problems is literally infinite. Every negotiation is different. Every negotiation will have a different set of problems that crop up. But you'll find that many problems relate to the major categories of my system. Who are their decision makers? What's their pain? What's their budget? In the Network Inc. case, the new team brought in to take over from the incompetent old team had to start almost from scratch with all of the problems in that negotiation. They had to do a lot of blank slating and ask a lot of questions. All too often, we negotiators try not to recognize our problems, or if we do recognize them, we're then tempted to sweep them under the carpet and hope they go away. If the problems seem insurmountable, we give up. In short, we are often the real problem underlying all of our problems because we do not deal with them head on. But if we do deal with our problems head-on, we appear as effective people to the adversary. This is comforting for the adversary and for us. Baggage, ours and theirs. Baggage is our collected life experiences and observations, some old, some new, some wise, some foolish, that we carry around all the time. We may have worked our way through a lot of personal baggage, but other kinds can pop up in any negotiation. How many people do you think are burdened by baggage related to gender, age, religion, education, appearance, attitudes, financial status, experience, or seniority? Whatever baggage you think will be a problem in the negotiation needs to be dealt with up front. Some new clients are surprised to learn that such issues properly belong on the agenda. They think of an agenda as dealing only with the big issues of the final deal per se, unit price, delivery dates, and the like. Problems they can see after thinking about it. But baggage? My answer, agendas and mini-agendas lay out everything that will significantly affect reaching that deal. Baggage is certainly in that category. By bringing up baggage, aren't we making assumptions, and aren't we supposed to avoid assumptions? Shrewd questions. Baggage is the one and only area in which you can make an assumption regarding your adversary, based on your experience with other adversaries and how they've perceived you. You have to have a personal history with the issue. Baggage is an educated guess. But if you do have any such assumptions, you should bring them up. This may be difficult for you to do, but you should be more afraid of the baggage that's neither recognized nor negotiated in the beginning. Your adversary will not resent your question about baggage. He wasn't born yesterday. He'll know where you're coming from. He'll respect you for asking. Or maybe the baggage you lay on the table does kill the deal then and there. Maybe your adversary just won't take seriously anyone who's relatively inexperienced. It happens. So what's the loss if you lay your inexperience on the table and the adversary walks away? You weren't going to get anywhere anyway. You've kept your time and energy budget extremely low. But if your adversary does not walk off, you've gained some respect for your forthrightness and competence, and you've negotiated a track on which to run without being blindsided. George, I'm new in this business. If my inexperience is going to be a problem in this deal, let's talk about it now. Yes, now's a good time, John. The only problem I have with your being new is that if we come up against something you can't handle with confidence, I want your assurance that you'll call in someone to help. Someone who really knows how to handle that problem. If that's okay with you, I'm comfortable. And that's fine with me. Are you sure it's okay with you? Yes, John, it's okay with me. All right, that'll be our deal. If I can't handle something with complete confidence, I'll call my boss to help. That's our deal. Agreed? Agreed. Note the 3+, of course. George agreed 3 times. Sometimes an agenda item simply clears the air. Folks, I'm a lawyer. This a problem? Laughter ensues, which represents progress, but you push ahead with 3+. Seriously, we lawyers don't rank too high in the polls these days. You sure it's not a problem? Everyone shakes his or her head in the negative, so you make the point for the 3rd time. No? Great. Everyone loves the fact that I'm a lawyer. More laughter. Now you're a swell fellow, and there's no need to kill all the lawyers after all. But if you hadn't brought up the question, you might expect to hear, days or weeks down the line, something like this. Well, Bill, since this contract is so important, I'll get back to you after I've looked this over and talked with some people. Your adversary's unstated feeling might be, I wouldn't trust a lawyer with the time of day. I think I'll check with the competition. I'll check with my lawyer. Or, in a different situation, your adversary might reply, I like what you've shown me, Betty. You call me back in a few weeks, and I'll let you know my decision. His unstated feeling? Widgets are a man's business. What can you know about them? If Betty has run into such biases in the past, she must get the question out in the open immediately by saying, John, I'm one of the few women in the widget industry. I know of one other. We're rare in this field, let's face it. Frankly, I've encountered resentment from some guys for this reason alone, that I'm a woman. What problems do you see here? And then proceed with the 3+, no matter what John's answer is. Perhaps he won't be honest, but the fact that the question is now on the table might give him second thoughts about letting any bias affect his decisions. More baggage I've seen in my day. Your chief negotiator used to work for us and had a distinctly negative experience. Our chief negotiator used to work for you and had a distinctly negative experience. Our main competitor has been your supplier for 12 years. We've been remiss in not calling on you for 3 years. Your manufacturing is biased against us and doesn't want to expand our role within your company. We've been consistently late in delivery of systems. You just don't believe we can do any better than our competitors. You believe our company is too expensive. You believe our company is too small for you to depend on. You don't like our dual pricing policy and are concerned about overseas support. We come dangerously close to needing some orders booked in the short term. The line between problems and baggage is a thin one, obviously, and not a critical one. Baggage discarded by all concerned is not a problem. Baggage that isn't discarded remains a problem. Just be sure that every problem and every piece of baggage is placed on an agenda. Use your imagination, use your experience, use your common sense. When in doubt, err on the side of including a candidate problem or baggage on the agenda. Once. In addition to problems and baggage, we have once as legitimate issues for an agenda. Once can be much more complicated than either of the other categories. Consider this quick exchange. John, I have an idea for your business that could increase its value dramatically. Good, Bill. Let's hear it. Great, John. I'll lay it out right here on the desk. Then 10 minutes later, I like what I see, Bill. Let me study it for a week or two, then get back to me.
Sure, John. I'll talk to you in a few weeks.
Far-fetched, you say? Stand in my shoes as a coach for a few days. I see this often in new clients. What did Bill want in this negotiation? From that conversation, we don't know exactly. What was the outcome? Unfortunately, this we do know. Poor Bill has spilled his beans and is now completely at the mercy of his adversary. In fact, I know of a similar situation in which the noncommittal adversary took the new idea to a third party and slipped himself into the deal as broker of record. Insult and injury. Of all the issues in the negotiation that should be placed on an agenda but often are not, wants are supreme. In this regard, they're our greatest cause of failure. Often negotiators don't know what they want, not really, not step by step by step down the long and winding road. They just want a signed deal, that's all. They don't have a clue about what they want at every step of the decision-making process along the way. They're thinking about ends, which are out of their control, not about means, which we control with agendas. Without a clear understanding and picture of what we want at every point in the negotiation, we can't put it on an agenda. And if we can't put it on an agenda, we have no right to ask for it. And if we can't ask for it, we put ourselves completely at the mercy of the adversary. So if we want to stay in control to the extent possible, and we do, what we want must be a part of every agenda. Want, not need. We don't need anything, of course. Granted, it's often difficult to figure out what we want, but figuring this out will make you rich in agenda. You can make all the negotiating mistakes in the world, but if you get a handle on what you want and get these wants placed on an agenda negotiated with the adversary, you've got a chance. How could incompetent Bill's negotiation with John have been structured to keep Bill in control? Well, first, Bill has to ask himself what he wants at this earliest stage of the negotiation. What he wants, or should want, is to protect his ideas. The following would have been a productive approach. John, if I had an idea for your business that could increase its value dramatically over the next 5 years, who would be involved in the decision process?
Bill, I make all those decisions.
Of course you do, but who would give you good advice in financial areas?
Well, Bill, I'm the guy, but I would want my attorney and tax man to look at it.
I see, John. Who else would you get involved?
No one else. That'd be the group.
John, here's what I'd like you to do. I have an idea drawn up. I'd like to show it to you. If you like it, can you and I show it to your attorney and accountant together? Of course, if you don't like it, we'll drop it. Fair?
Sounds fair to me.
Okay, John. Our deal is that if you like my idea, we'll go together to see the attorney and the tax man. Please sign this broker of record to protect my ideas. This says that others can't take my ideas and use them without my being paid. John, are you comfortable with protecting my work?
Sure, I have no problem. If you do the work, you get paid.
Are you sure you're okay with this, John?
I have no problem with it, Bill. It's only fair. Let me sign it.
Bill, by asking a few questions of himself and coming up with what he wanted right then, was able to negotiate an agenda over which he could have some control. Of course, this doesn't mean he'll get the deal. He still has difficult negotiations ahead, but at least he has a chance to get things off on the right foot. Knowing what we want out of each stage of the negotiation, what we want on each agenda, helps us make sure that our mission and purpose is clear. It guarantees that our goals are clear. It makes us think clearly and how to proceed, A, B, C, D, E, and all the way to Z, and a deal that sticks. But what if John won't sign the proposed agreement? Well, find out now. If we know from the beginning what we want, there's no need to compromise and no danger of being sucker-punched later. If you can't figure out what you want at a given point in the negotiation, figure out what else is missing. Mission and purpose in place? If you haven't prepared for the negotiation session, how aware can you be of what you want from that session? Not very. But if you know exactly what you want, how are you perceived by the adversary? Effective. If you know exactly what you want and it's valid, how early do you compromise? You don't compromise early.
Take a look at these once, most from assorted actual negotiations, a few generic. We want to share our vision of our business and how the negotiation should proceed. We want our company to be seen by your company as committed to your success. We want your feedback on our suggestion about changing the rate scale. We want a meeting to discuss the latest changes in your proposal. We want your full support of our programs. We want an objective comparison of our service vis-a-vis our competitor's service. We want you to understand that this field is changing rapidly, and we want you to see where your decision on pricing could be taking you in the future. We want a clear, complete picture from you of exactly what you need from us at this stage. We want an introduction with the president, the one and only decision maker in the company. We want a demonstration of your product. We want you to assure us that your inventory and production line can meet the requirements of this enhanced schedule. We want the termite report. We want your financial statement. We want your resume. We want the first draft of the contract. We want more time to reply to your RFP, request for proposal. We want a definite date by which you'll respond to our RFP. This list could be infinite. For just a single complicated actual negotiation, it could be pages long. A great exercise is to sit down and think about a typical negotiation in your field, if there is such a thing, and draw up a list of wants along the way. The really complete list will be pretty long. Now, I want to take a closer look at the list above because these wants are not quite sharp enough. Think about this question. What does every want entail from the adversary? A decision, of course. This is almost by definition because any progress depends on decisions. Therefore, I'd like you to consider each want in the negotiation in terms of the decision required for the adversary in order to fulfill it. And, of course, the decision may always be no. You allow every opportunity for your adversary to say no. And, of course, you're wary of any yes and extremely wary of any maybe. So, we could reverse that list in this way. We want you to reject or accept our vision of your business and how the negotiation should proceed. We want to know whether you do or do not see our company as committed to your success. We want you to reject or accept our proposed change in the rate scale. We want you to reject or accept a meeting to discuss the latest changes in your proposal. We want to know whether you do or do not fully support our programs. We want you to either submit or refuse to submit the termite report. We want you to either refuse or grant us more time to reply to your RFP. This is a good exercise to help you understand that every want does indeed require decisions by the adversary. By framing your wants in terms of those decisions, you discipline yourself to live in the world of the adversary, a theme of my entire system, of course. In most negotiations, at some point, one of your wants will be some numbers, prices, quantities. But always remember that numbers are limitations. Avoid them until the time is right. A very recent example? After quoting a $185 unit cost in a pre-camp negotiation with a large customer, a client just received $290 in the camp era. This can happen much more often than you realize. As the buyer, you do not want to know the seller's prices in the first meeting unless this is an extremely simple negotiation. As the seller, you do not want to know how much the customer says he wants to pay in the first meeting. Wants proceed in lockstep with the other principles of my system. Your first wants will concern the big picture, your adversary's baggage, perhaps, and certainly his vision and pain and needs and budgets. What happens next? The last agenda item is what happens next. How many times have you been in a negotiation and assumed that when the other party said, call us back, they really meant it, but when you did call, they were busy and couldn't talk? How often is a brush-off like, I'll talk to you in a few weeks, accepted by a neophyte negotiator who gets sucked into small talk, gets uncomfortable, leaves the subject, makes assumptions, doesn't conclude business? It happens all the time because we get lost in the emotion of the final moments of a meeting or phone call. But you must learn very quickly to take care of business by carefully negotiating what happens next. As with finding the decision maker, this may seem like an innocuous item for an agenda, but believe me, it's not. It protects us against unwarranted assumptions, not that you have assumptions of any kind other than baggage. It's a leg up on the next agenda. It's simply mandatory. And of course, what happens next must be negotiated with the adversary, and it must be verified 3 times. Enough said. The logic is simple. By crafting agendas, you find out where you stand. By putting these agendas into action, you improve this standing.